Hello and welcome to this very special WTF1 podcast where myself and the amazing Amber Jones are going to be delving into what has happened so far for this Formula One season. We are four races down? I can't count. Four. Yes?
I think if four. We're good at maths.
Five.
Five I'm races down.
We're five races down. And so, you know, we're slightly into this Formula One season. I think there's enough to talk about because it has been a crazy season, not just on track, probably less so on track,
yeah,
more so off track.
Well, I was thinking when we say crazy, you're going to have some people being, really? Is it crazy? But we have to specify that it's crazy in probably a different way than what we're used to.
Yeah, well, you talk about, let's get into the first thing. Probably one of the first things that happened in the season was just Lewis Hamilton announcing Ferrari. That feels like last season. That feels like so long ago.
So long ago now. Like, I remember when it came out and I thought, no, because all the rumours started to come out. It hadn't been officially announced yet. And then you had like Sky Sports reporting on it. But it still technically hadn't been officially announced. Mm-hmm. People were like, oh, no, it's not. It's never going to happen. I thought Sky Sports are reporting on it. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then it came out later that day. Mental, crazy. So many emotions because I'm so happy to see him in Ferrari. But then I'm kind of sad now, and we've had this debate quite a bit, because Ferrari seem to be in a good place with the drivers they've got at the minute. So, but yeah, my head was blown when that news came out.
I think on that point of Ferrari being in a good place with drivers, I think Carlos Sainz this weekend showed why Ferrari aren't keeping him with his driving in the sprint race. Went side by side with Leclerc, closed the door, shoved him off, went into the hairpin, also made contact, shoved him off. And I think if I've rewind my mind and I think back, I think that's also happened on multiple occasions where I think Leclerc is very much the team player.
Mm-hmm.
I think Leclerc's too nice, doesn't have that Verstappen element that's like, I'm going to shove you off. I'm going to, you know, take charge of this race and, you know, you back out of it or we crash.
He has the talent, but I agree with that. He's not, as aggressive.
Yeah, science is you back out or we crash.
Yeah. Especially now, you know, he's really trying to show himself to the teams that someone give me a seat, I'm such a good driver. But unfortunately, then you can make mistakes when you're a little bit too aggressive.
Yeah, and I think it's just the team play element that I think Leclerc's more of a team player out of the two.
Definitely.
That if Lewis comes in and he is the better driver, that Leclerc not necessarily would say, okay, yeah, I'm happy to be a number two.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want to be that, of course. But if there's a race where, oh, Lewis is on a better strategy here, he'll be like, okay, cool, let's work together for the team. Whereas Sainz might be a bit like, why?
Yeah,
why
probably not as cooperative. What I think is going to be crazy is if Hamilton doesn't outperform Charles, because then there's a whole question then of, oh, maybe Hamilton has lost it now, or Charles a better driver than Lewis Hamilton, seven-time world champion. So I think when this comes into fruition next season, that's when it's going
to
kick off.
Yeah, you also get to see, you know, is Lewis Hamilton, you know, does he still have it?
Yeah.
Is he at the end of his career? Is it time for him to sadly say, okay, I had the eighth in one hand, but it fell away from me.
But quite
maybe taken
nice.
Away from me.
Maybe
but
bittersweet, but quite nice to end it with Ferrari, obviously, if he does choose to
I think,
leave.
Yeah, that's
I'm
amazing.
Left with such an amazing team, such a historic team.
Which is weird for Ferrari that it's you think of it in a sense of it's a retirement home, you know? You think of it as like, oh, okay, this is a team that I get to tick off my bucket list before I retire.
Thank you.
You know, I've done that team. That's amazing. Love this. But, I mean, you could either see it two ways, Lewis Hamilton beats him, challenges for the eighth, hopefully, that the team's good. Or, Charles Leclerc is the quicker driver, but I think Lewis is a great driver to learn off of compared to Carlos. Carlos is a quick driver and probably one of the most intelligent drivers on the grid.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't have that experience of winning a championship. And I think Leclerc can learn a lot of that from Lewis Hamilton. And I think those two get along well with each other.
Yeah.
Of course, him and Nico got along well with each other before they didn't get along well with each other.
Yeah.
So things change when you fight for a championship, for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, one that I'm very excited to see. And I think we will hopefully, providing they can get the car right in 2025, Red Bull versus Ferrari, please. That'd
please,
be amazing.
Can we see that? Can we see Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton go head to head once again? That would be amazing to see, but it's just if Ferrari can match the pace of the Red Bulls, which right now seems quite optimistic because, yes, they're the second team. Yes, we've seen them get closer at times, but the Chinese Grand Prix has just shown us Max is way too far ahead. You can get close to Perez, but you might not get close to Max.
Yeah, certainly. So, right, then we go to Bahrain. Bahrain testing.
All kicks off.
And Bahrain all kicks off. We've got the Christian Horner stuff going on with Red Bull. You know, we had a start of a season where we should really be excited about the start of a brand new season. Okay, we all get excited for a new season.
Yep.
And then we realize that it's the same as last season and Max is dominating and there's no competition. But really excited for a new season. And then there's this whole massive cloud that overshadows Formula One, isn't there?
It's difficult because people don't want to make judgment on it because they don't want to say the wrong thing. But then again, you don't want to hide from it because everyone should stand up and say
the difficulty is
something.
Not having all the information.
Yes.
And the transparency of it because then it makes it more difficult because, you know, rightly so, that people can come out and say, oh, but you don't know it's true. So, you know, it could just be people coming for Christian Horner because they dislike him. Yeah. It's a valid point because there's no transparency, but there's also no argument against that to say it's not true because there's no transparency to prove that it's not true.
Yeah.
So I think for it being kept in the dark is a bit kind of like difficult for fans, for viewers, for journalists to really kind of get a sense of what is going on.
I think it makes it more difficult now because you don't know what's happened, but Christian Horner obviously is still in the sport and you still see him every race weekend, so you don't want to forget about it, but it seems like we've moved more in that direction. There might be a lot going on behind the scenes, but we just don't know that. So it definitely clouded Red Bull at that time, but then lots of different news comes out. Even throwing Jos Verstappen in there and he started to make comments about Christian Horner.
Yeah.
That was crazy. Well, that's it all seems to die down.
Yeah, which did make me think and put my conspiracy theory hat on that it was a Red Bull kind of PR move because the whole Verstappen's looking at Mercedes, Verstappen might move, Verstappen might leave the team, or, you know, saying, oh, Helmut Marko's going to leave, and if Helmut leaves, then Verstappen leaves. And all this, was that just to take the conversation away?
So.
And we saw that before when all the cheating allegations came out about, you know, the cost cap and everything like that. And then next week, oh, by the way, we hate Ted Kravitz and we're not going to speak to Sky for the whole weekend. And then everyone's talking about, oh, Sky this, Sky that, and this and that. So they're very good at taking the conversation away from the topic at hand. So was that just amazing PR from them to take that conversation away, or were those actual conversations that were happening at the time?
I think some of them might have been actual conversations and some of them 100% fabricated. Obviously, I can't say, but it's just my opinion. Because Max Verstappen moving to Mercedes, I'll never get over it. I never believed it for one second. Even if Mercedes are a great team in the next 2 years, regulations change again, 2026, even if they are, I still don't see it. It's a rival of them. I could never fathom a world where Max Verstappen moves to Red Bull unless Red Bull become an awful team and at the back of the grid, potentially. So for me, they threw that in there just to create loads of drama because then there's loads of debate. It's not just about Red Bull. It's about Max. It's about the team as a whole. It's about Mercedes. What's Toto doing? Where's Lewis? All of that, everything became this massive storm that it took away all the attention off. So definitely, I think it was PR move. Calculated. Did it work? I think.
Bahrain then happened, and I generally can't remember what happened in that race because I think it was. I think we've had a season.
It was so long ago, or?
I don't think it was because it was so long ago. I think it's because Formula One's in a difficult state at the moment where there is lack of competition. And I think there's arguments from both sides of fan bases. There's a lot of fan base arguments of saying, you know, oh, this is the most dominant era. And then Verstappen fans be like, no, do you not remember the Hamilton era, you know, from 2014 to 2020 when Mercedes were second clear. And yeah, that's completely valid, but you also have, at least for Hamilton's era, 2014, you had Rosberg, 2015 Rosberg challenge, 2016 Rosberg wins, 2017 Vettel challenge for a bit, 2018 Vettel challenge for a bit, for quite a while of the season, and there was always that competition between the two drivers. Then 2019, fully Mercedes, and Bottas didn't really challenge at all. 2020, fully Mercedes, Bottas didn't really challenge at all. But at least 2020 was an exciting season.
Yeah.
2021, exciting season. You know, one of the best, not quite as good as 2012, but one of the best in recent seasons. and then 22, we were set up for what could be a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then halfway through the season, it just kind of died. And since then, it's always been, you know, Max has gone on so many. I think Max is in maybe like the top three in terms of most wins in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So to be in the top three and to do that in three seasons, the stat of between the last Chinese Grand Prix and this Chinese Grand Prix, Max has won 53 races. Everybody else on the grid has won 53 races. Like, that just shows to you the dominance in what has happened over the last few years. And it's not dominance in the sense that the car is necessarily amazing in terms of quality trim, because the qualifying gaps aren't that big.
Mm-hmm.
It's the race pace of the car that it's so good on its tires, and it's so it can just push non-stop for so long, whereas other teams are like, okay, we can push, but we can push for a couple of laps and our tires are dead, so we need to make sure we just conserve that till the next pit stop.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think we're in a bit of a sticky situation where it's a bit more dull. I just think for Formula One, we need three teams up there fighting for the title. And I think the best sort of era, and people always ask the question, okay, what is the best era that you've lived in? And I think the best era for me is that, you know, early 2010s, mm-hmm. where you had three top teams, and any one of those three top teams for a couple of those seasons could win the championship.
There's more going on track to keep you excited from like a few different angles. It's not just, oh, Max has won, so where else am I going to look?
Exactly.
Is it going to be Ferrari? But then again, they're probably going to be 3-4.
Yeah.
Is it the McLaren? I think then you get a little bit confused, don't you? And then if McLaren come on top, you're like, well, yeah, they're a good team, so you're not super surprised, but then it's nice to have some different variables going on. Whereas I think, you know, back in the day, 2012, there's a lot more going on. You can pick different parts.
People listening right now will be like, back in the day,
oh, I'm
2012,
so sorry. It just seems like I was 11. I was 11 in 2012. I'm now 23. That is back in the day.
I haven't watched pre-2010 Formula One.
Yeah.
I was a child. I walked into the room and would ask my parents, is Schumacher winning yet? That was my experience of watching Formula
Who's
One
winning?
And playing the games as a kid. Like, that was my experience of Formula One then. You know, I was interested, but I didn't have the attention span to watch a whole race and follow the sport completely. And I that's completely fair. And I think everyone starts their journey at whatever point and then becomes a fan of the sport.
Definitely. Perfectly shouldn't fine. Be discredited if they came into the sport later on, because you see that a lot with the Drive to Survive generation. Mm-hmm. They don't come into the sport and then just don't know anything that's happened. Let's say they come in 2019, they don't know anything that's happened before 2019. Mm-hmm. They go back and research, they're probably going to not have the same knowledge as someone that did watch those races. But there might be some people that watch those races and don't have a great memory. So they can't really give off every single thing, but they were present when they were on. So definitely shouldn't discredit anyone at whatever time they came into the sport.
Yeah, and I just think that we're lacking that competition from other teams. And I don't think it should be a spec series. I love IndyCar, but there is also a struggle to sometimes follow storylines. I think it's better than maybe Formula E, for example. Formula E, for me, is one of the more difficult series to follow because you can't necessarily build storylines. Because I went to the London E Prix last time. That was my first experience of being there. I follow loosely the sport, but I'm a very casual, very, very casual fan. Like, I tune in every now and again. And I was asking my friend who was next to me, being like, okay, so what is like the bottom team at the moment? And they said that team that it was, I can't remember which team it was now, but they said the team name. And I said, oh, so how many times have they made it into like the qualifying shootout, like towards the end? But oh yeah, a couple of times. And I'm like, yeah, but that, so you wouldn't have that. Whereas if a Williams makes it a Q3, there's a big like, oh wow, that's a great achievement for Williams. And you have to have those moments. You need those underdog stories. You need those times that Pierre Gasly wins a race in an AlphaTauri. If every team could win a race, Pierre Gasly wins a race and you're like, okay, cool, yeah, that's a good achievement for him, great.
Yeah. But it's open for like anyone to win the race, really.
Yeah, that's too far, and that's spec series, which Formula One shouldn't be, because it's always cool to see all the different cars and all the different elements. But to have three teams dominate, and for those three teams to switch around, I think that's the perfect formula for Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
To have three teams dominate, and then for 10 years, and then 10 years later, and one of those teams might drop out and someone else comes in, which we kind of see, as we said on the hot takes on the previous podcast, that, you know, you have your 2010 era, McLaren, Red Bull, Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
McLaren dropped off, Mercedes stepped in there.
Yeah.
So you still have your three teams.
You do have that kind of rotation. Yeah. I think what gave me a lot of optimism, though, for the Chinese Grand Prix was, yes, Max dominated, he was so far ahead of the pack, which that gives you a bit of pessimism, because you're like, oh, Max is just going to dominate every single race. But it was the fact that the Ferraris and Perez and the McLarens were all quite close. You've got George Russell potentially catching up. You know, Alonso's thrown in the mix. And that's what I am actually liking about this season. Although Max is dominating and people have a lot to say about that. And even it can get boring. I find myself thinking, oh, gosh, when someone else wins, it's like, yes, this is amazing. Australia, I'll take that. But there's enough going on to keep my entertainment there. I'm not in this position where I'm like, gosh, it's just way too dominating because Perez isn't always P2. If it was every single week, P1 Max, P2 Perez, every single week and in qualifying as well, that would be so boring. I do think there's a little bit of variation just between Ferrari, McLaren, Red Bull, and you can maybe throw in Aston Martin in there and maybe Mercedes at times when they're performing properly to the full capacity.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think you get better races maybe like Japan when there's a lot more variation in strategy and people are on different tyres at different times and one team's going long, so the Red Bull then drop behind them and they have to make overtakes. It's a lot nicer to see, even if it's like old tyres versus new tyres, it's still an overtake that you get. They still have to get the overtake done. Sometimes the driver might just be like, okay, cool, I'll get out of the way. But other times they're going to have to do it round a corner, which is always, as a fan, that's what you want to see.
But I will say this season has been sometimes quite entertaining, but not super, what's the word I'm looking for? Like Max is dominating, so it's not super competitive.
Yeah.
But there's been entertaining aspects.
There's been stuff going on elsewhere.
Haas have massively impressed me this season. I think they're doing amazing. To start the season saying we're really going to struggle, Steiner's out, which that's another shock. You know, Steiner leaves, Komatsu comes in. And I think Haas are doing really great. They were quite disappointed with their positions in the Chinese Grand Prix. But ultimately, I think the past few races, they've done great. They're building that team back up. And I can see them being potentially top of a midfield in a few years if they keep getting this right.
Well, they are. I mean, Formula One is split into kind of two groups of teams. You have your top five, which are regularly scoring points, and then you have your bottom five. And for those bottom five to score points, they need somebody in that top five to be out of it. Obviously, for this one, it was Lance Stroll who was out of that top five, and Nico Hülkenberg found himself in there. You know, did it again in Saudi, and you know, I think Haas are doing a really decent job. I think they are the best team out of the bottom teams. I think they're having a really good season, especially compared to where they were, said they were going to be. Yeah, they came out of it and went, we're going to be last.
Yeah.
We're going to suck.
I knew they were lying. I knew this. Maybe they did actually think that, but I thought it's sandbagging. 100%. They're going to be amazing. They just don't want to say it yet. They're just going to let everyone know, yeah, we're probably not going to be that good. And then it's a bigger comeback story for them when they're doing 10 times better than what they said they're going to do. You don't want to be that team that's like, yeah, we've got a strong car, and then the car just doesn't perform well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's better to, you know, aim low and succeed those expectations.
Exactly. And now I'm a massive Haas fan.
Especially when, you know, he's coming into a new job, taking over Günther Steiner. I think it's a, you know, you come in and go, oh yeah, I'm going to be the best and we're going to challenge for the title.
Yeah.
And they don't know what's going to like, well, you clearly suck. Get this guy out of the team. But if you come in and you undersell it and, you know, more realistic expectations, I think it was perfectly fine. And I think that's why I like him.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like James Vowles because it's more realistic. It's like, I'm not trying to get this team to win a championship next season.
Yeah.
We need to work step by step. We need to break everything down, you know, knock down every wall and rebuild everything once again. I think, you know, Haas have certainly done a lot better this year. I know Williams have kind of taken a step back with the car to make it a more all-round package rather than just be like, we are that straight speed demon that we were last year. So if it's a straight line speed track, watch out for us. We're going to be ahead of you.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to overtake us.
They've opted to make a more all-rounder.
And because of that, they haven't scored any points so far this season. Alex Albon in the standings is 15th ahead of the drivers who haven't scored any points.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been, you know, it's obviously been taken up by the Haas and the RB of Yuki Tsunoda. I think he's also thoroughly impressed me this season as well.
And a series of unfortunate events for Williams.
Yes.
They've had a lot of drama.
They'll be happy to get away from the Asia side of this season so that they can have a chassis spare again. But yeah, things haven't necessarily gone as well for Williams, but we're still early on in the season. I think they're still, with Albon in that fight, Sargent's still struggling, I think it's fair to say. I think he does need to pick up his game and try and match Albon in a sense. I think it's okay for Albon to be the number one driver and to outperform Sargeant, but at least be closer out on track would be what people would like to see more often in the season.
I feel like we're seeing this a lot with different teams. Like, for example, Aston Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Alonso's always quite, well, most time, don't want to say always, but most of the time quite far ahead than Stroll. Yep. We've seen this with Mercedes a little bit now as well. George Russell is outperforming Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And then we're seeing it with Williams and maybe some other teams as well. Like with Hülkenberg, for example, is normally more ahead than Magnussen. So we're seeing these gaps in teams now, but people are being a bit harsher with Sargeant because he's making a lot of mistakes. But, you know, Albon is the stronger driver. Mm-hmm. People are sort of debating, does Sargeant deserve that seat? And then calling him, you know, a bad driver and all this stuff. But if you look along the grid, you're seeing this in most of the teams.
I don't think Sargeant's a bad driver. I don't think that he is, you know, he's obviously got to Formula One for a reason. He has been successful in junior categories. And I think that it's right to have a hype around him as a driver and a reason why people thought this driver deserves a shot. Let's give him a shot in Formula One. He's part of Williams and I think he deserves to be a part of that team and see what happens. So far in a season of five races, hasn't necessarily impressed to be like, okay, you know, I don't think there's a call. I think especially when your teammates outperforming you so much, then it's a bit more like, okay, interesting. But you also have to pull it back a little bit and be like, okay, cool, he's a rookie still. Okay, he was last season. He's no longer a rookie, but just because you're in your second season doesn't mean, right, you've had 1 year.
Yeah.
You should now be
now
Lewis Hamilton.
You're an expert.
Yeah. Right. There's still a lot
rookie,
of learning.
Technically.
These cars are very different to Formula 2. And yeah, I think there's still a lot of learning. I think if he were to be removed from Williams, like I've said before with Lance Stroll, whilst being a Lance Stroll fan, I'd be able to accept it and understand, okay, cool, I understand the decision why he's been removed from that seat.
Yeah.
I think he can still have a successful career over in other categories of racing, whether that be to go over to IndyCar as an American or to go over to Formula E or to World Endurance Championship, something like that. And also with Williams having those ties with Mercedes and they want to maybe look at, okay, you've given this rookie a chance. It hasn't quite worked. Now give this rookie a chance with Kimi Antonelli after F2.
I think people would love to see that as well. Yeah. Unfortunately, Sargeant hasn't got the backing anymore because the little mistakes that he has been making, and obviously he's underperforming.
Yeah.
But I did feel really bad for him when we had the whole chassis drama because Albon crashes the car, but then Sargeant loses his car because then obviously he's given it to Albon. So giving the chassis to Albon, which I felt very unfortunate for Sargeant. I get it as a team decision. Mm-hmm. You have to. Who's a stronger driver? We've only got one available car, really. You know, we don't have a spare chassis. We can't fix Albon's
car. Who's
your
best chance of getting points?
Exactly. Yeah. You're going to go for that stronger driver. But you do feel bad for Sargeant. Yeah. You know, yes, it was a correct team decision, but it's such an unfortunate one and not his fault at all. So that created this whole debate of should that have happened, should it not have happened? Yeah. And I think most people were leaning more towards, yes, it should have happened because it's better for the team. Mm-hmm. But Albon didn't massively impress on that race anyways.
Well,
people were like, oh,
he just missed
out
on points. Kevin Magnussen got a point. There was a couple of... It was always going to be difficult to score points, as I said.
Yeah, there was a lot of pressure on him to score
but you had
points.
Max, Hamilton and George all out of that race. That's three opportunities for backmarker teams to score. Tsunoda was one, Hülkenberg was the other, and Magnussen was the other one. And then Albon was literally less than a second off of the point. So Sargeant, like, no offence to him. I don't think he would have got in that position. Yeah, could have maybe finished 13th or 14th in that race, but P11 or potentially fighting with Magnussen. Yeah, I sadly don't think it would have been there for him. I understand the reasoning behind it, but that's a tick in Sargeant's box in terms of trying to get a seat again for next season. Mm-hmm. You know, he has to play that team game and he has to show Williams that, you know what, because if he starts going, no, you're not taking my seat, you know, I'm not allowing you, or does what Max Verstappen said, and you know, he said I'd crash that car so you wouldn't get a chance, puts it in the wall, whatever, so like, well, now no one's driving the cars.
Yeah.
Williams is going to look at that and go, well, okay, cool, we're going to switch you up mid-season. Like, here's your contract, job done, see you later. So he needs to prove that he's a team player as well and needs to, you know, kiss a few bums through the
if
way.
If he was more experienced and more confident, then potentially he's in a position where he can say, no, that's my car. No, you're not having anything from it. I'm driving this. But like you say, you know, he's still fresh into Formula One. You can't. Yeah. You do not want to make any enemies.
Yeah,
you
you're not
need
established
a seat.
In that sense. Yeah, so you can't do it.
Do you think there's any other drivers on the grid that, if that happened in a different team, that would have, minus Max, because he said that he would have said, no, you're not having that at all. I'm still racing. Is there any drivers that spring
to
mind?
Any driver in Red Bull. I think they would have had a hard chance, though, with Max and Perez. They would have.
No, because I don't think Perez would
said,
stand a ground.
Nah, Perez would have been like, you're not having my car. And then there would have been a heated discussion. both Mercedes drivers would say, no, you're not having my car. Both Ferrari drivers would say, you're not having my car. Both McLaren drivers, I think, would say.
I don't know. I think Piastri might, if it was Lando that crashed out.
Given that he's got a 2-year contract after impressing last season, I think he's more established to be, in a sense, be like, no, sorry. No, you're not having my car. There'd be arguments. Yeah. They might, in the end, say, I'm sorry, we're going to go against your decision. We're going to take it away from you. You don't have a choice now.
Yeah. And because that's the thing. It's the team's decision at the end of the day,
and it might break
it?
Down a relationship, potentially. But I think he's in his right to say no. I think Bottas would say no.
If it was Bottas that crashed out.
Bottas. I don't know.
Oh, no, if it was Joe that crashed out. I don't think Bottas was, because he's the more experienced driver. So I think he would find many reasons for why that shouldn't happen.
No, yeah, exactly. So he would fight against it. But then I'm also thinking, like, I just feel like Bottas is a nice guy. They'd be like, do you know what?
If but that's then
right I don't know.
For the team.
I don't know. No, maybe.
Because he's the stronger driver.
To be able to say, no, you can't have it.
Yeah, I don't think he would.
Magnussen would crash the car. Magnussen would be like, no one's driving. See you later. I think also Hülkenberg would say no, but they've been in the sport a lot longer that they are able to say that. I think
it's the rookies, isn't it? Yeah. Right, it's difficult. Are they going to stand their ground? Are they going
to? Both drivers would probably say no. Yeah. Both drivers would be like, you don't have a choice.
Yuki would have a lot to say.
From the first four races, okay, Ricardo was a lot better in China, but the first four races, they would have gone to Ricardo, sorry, mate, no. Yuki's been doing a lot better than you.
We're taking that off you. What about Aston Martin? So,
oh, that's an easy choice.
No.
That's an easy choice. Lance Stroll deserves the car. He's the best driver.
Oh, no, Hayden.
No, I think...
because then you've got Lance Stroll, obviously. Lawrence Stroll owns the team, so does he have more of that?
That's a good point, actually.
Would he be like, no, my son's still driving?
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking more about, come on, it's Alonso.
That's what I'm thinking. What would happen in that
like
scenario?
I like to think, despite your son being in the car, Alonso is your best chance of scoring the better results. As much as I am
a
Stroll fan,
I don't know what's going to happen.
Sometimes you just need to put on your level head and be like, listen, get shook around a little bit. But look, Alonso's a better driver.
Let the goat go out.
Put him in the car.
You can stay in for the day.
Both Alpines would get out and they'd have a fight with each other.
Yeah.
Both Gasly
and Ocon. Quite fiery, so.
Yeah, they'd just beat each other up. They'd be like, you're not having my car.
Something would happen.
Yeah. Have we missed a team off the grid? I feel like we've missed a team. No, I think that's all the teams.
That's it, because then it's just Williams, but that actually happened to Williams.
Yeah, so. If it happened the other way, it wouldn't have mattered.
No,
it wouldn't have mattered.
No.
It's still out of one.
Yeah.
Interesting. Something else that's happened this season, which is part of the Formula One umbrella, is the F1 Sim Racing has come back. But F1 Sim Racing has happened. I've had the pleasure of being on the show. It's been an exciting season so far, where a lot of drivers have been going head to head. I think it's because it's kind of like, imagine Formula One, but if it was a spec series, because all the cars are completely equal and all the drivers are separated by, you know, half a second in terms of lap time at some tracks. You know, we go to Zandvoort and they're separated by, I think the top three were separated by less than a tenth. Like, it's insane gaps between drivers. It's been an incredible season so far. We've had two events. We're going to have a third event this season coming. But let's also talk about an exciting prospect coming, because in the F1 Sim Racing, when I'm there is very, very little women that are in that space. Like, you go into that, I think it's a very intimidating space because it's all guys that are taking part in terms of esports. But even in the teams, there's not many behind the scenes. There's not a lot of women representation.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Definitely. Like, I found it quite daunting. Being a motorsport fan, working in the motorsport industry, it's quite natural now to take that journey. And, you know, I'm always around something sim racing based. Go to a lot of different events. You know, we go together and there's times where I think, oh, is this, you know, embarrassing? Because I've not done a lot of sim racing, so I'm going to come onto the sim. You've already got that pressure of being, you know, a very small group of women there. Like when I go to these events, there's, you know, only about three or four women. Mm-hmm. And then to not have the experience as well, not just because you don't have experience, because you're a woman, you've got that scrutiny against you. So if we open up and make it more accessible, that's moving in the right direction. There's so many different initiatives going on now. Mm-hmm. But 100%, I would love to get into it more. Like, I'd love to know where to start, what competitions or where I can enter to build up my experience. I speak to you a lot. I'm like, hey, Hayden, what sim rig should I get? And how can I improve? And even Hannah Atkinson, who's TikToker, content creator, part of the WTF1 family, she's amazing. Mm-hmm. I said, Hannah, how did you get there? Practice. Mm-hmm. Got her own sim. People around her, you know, love the sport, love the sim racing. And she's amazing. You two go head to head, and I think I need to get up there. I really need to work on my sim racing skills.
No, Hannah is really quick, and I'm also part of the F1 Creator Series, which is just a lot of content creators taking part. And there's some really incredible, talented content creators out there. Only Vic, Jess Games, who does a lot of commentary.
Yeah.
We've got Artemis in there as well, Distinct Artemis, that she takes part in. A couple of them are part of the Red Bull program that did an initiative to have a lot of other drivers take part in, compete against each other to be a part of the Red Bull family in that sim racing, back in that sim racing part of the team. And yeah, we got a couple of names in that series, which is really incredible. But yeah, you know, 47% of people, you know, out of everyone who plays games, 47% of those are women.
But only 5% yeah, are esports
which
pros.
Which is incredible. But then you think about it and you look at the esports that, you know, I've not been to many other events. I'm a big Pokemon fan as well. And I look at that and I also look at that area and I'm like, no, it's right. There's not a lot. But definitely sim racing, zero. Zero people on the grid. There's zero women on the grid. Also looking down in further categories in league racing outside of that, which is like the sort of grassroots mm-hmm. for F1 sim racing. Very little representation.
Do you think that is because women feel like, and if they are, you know, sim racers, I'm kind of excluding myself out of this for the time mm-hmm. because I'm not a sim racer.
Yeah.
Dabble in it a little bit. Do you think it's because there's not more, you know, initiatives to just push women solely? So you see in mm-hmm. karting and you see in Formula One, they do these one gender series that helps just to start it, because the ultimate goal is to make it mixed genders.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't just want to segregate it. You want it to be mixed. Mm-hmm. Do you think potentially it's something like that?
I think it comes down to social values and society. You look at gaming. Let's take F1 sim racing. There is no reason why a woman cannot compete at the top level there mm-hmm. and win that championship. Because there is, the wheels have strength to them, the pedals have strength to them, but it's more about the precision and the consistency and being as precise as possible. Like taking every corner where you can cut it to the max, mm-hmm. but don't overstep that line so you get invalidated, and do that consistency. So it's more just about putting in the time. And I think it comes down to being at school. When you're at school, and you might, correct me if I'm wrong, but how much did you game when you were at school, in high school?
Not at all. The only the gaming aspect I did was, you know, like GTA and small video games, but not really. It was seen as a more of a male thing to do. I went to an all-girl school as well, mm-hmm. so there wasn't really anyone around me doing a lot of gaming.
Whereas for me, I'd come home and I'd be gaming and I'd be jumping on with my friends straight away, headset on. I've just seen my friends at school, but I come home, a headset on, and I'm chatting to my friends and we're playing games and we're playing, whether it's Call of Duty or whether it's, not a lot of them played F1, but, you know, I then met people who did play F1, and now I meet people that, you know, I race with all the time and I hang out with all the time, and we have rivalries in which that we push each other, and it doesn't have to be necessarily at the top of our grids. It can be further down where we are batting for a P11 and just trying to one-up each other. But then you have that competitive element where you can be friends with someone and you know, bounce off that. Whereas I think, you know, you go back to school, and in your friendship groups, what would you talk about? And even if you wanted to go into gaming, I think school is such, I mean, maybe it's just a British thing, but school is such a toxic place.
It's quite a clicky place, isn't
it? If you don't fit in, you are ridiculed. Mm-hmm. So you do everything to fit in. You know, I, as a kid, I would love to have gone and done acting, but I never went to drama school or anything like that, or drama clubs, because that's not what my friends did. My friends all play football. So at lunchtime, all I would do is play football, or my friends would all do gaming. So that's all I would do to fit in and not stand out and be different, so that I'd be outcast in that sort of sense. And I think that's very much the same way for gaming for young girls in school.
That it's sort of just quite odd, I'd say, but it shouldn't be. And I think it's just because there isn't, they're not pushing women to get into gaming. I think sort of accepting that it's mainly male dominated. So there isn't anyone pushing. But right now, we've got something exciting to say, haven't we, Hayden?
We do.
Sky Broadband are keen to change this, and we're thrilled to be working with them to bring power and drive equality in the UK gaming industry. So Sky Broadband and Guild Esports are launching their first tournament called Racer E-Series, and it's to find the next best woman pro sim racer. So the prize fund consists of a pro gaming contract with Guild Esports, and not only that, but also free Sky Broadband for 18 months. So I'll break down how it works. They'll be qualifying in three locations, the first being online, which you can find the link on our WTF1 link tree. The next one is at the Birmingham Bullring on the 26th to the 28th of April. And then last but not least, at Sky Guild Gaming Centre in London across a few dates in May. But please note that entrants must be 18 and older to enter. So if you're a woman gamer on your path to being a pro, then you don't want to miss this. Something really exciting at the minute. So you need to open up these initiatives, Hayden. You need to make it more accessible, more open for women to enter. There's so many great women talent out there. You just need to find it.
I think it's not just for women as well. It's for young girls who are, you know, in high school, in primary school.
Yeah.
You know, to jump on a game and also show this is a career now. I think for me, when I started doing, because I came through gaming in terms of content creation, and oh my God, it was a difficult time when I first started doing that, because I'd have my parents against me being like, why are you doing this? You know, go get a job. I did have a job at the time. I was part-time working at Tesco, but they were like, become a manager at Tesco. Like, why aren't you pushing for that? And I was like, I don't want to do that, because that's not a life that I want. I want this life. And I know that I can, you know, push myself in a content creation space or a gaming space.
It's something out of the norm, isn't it?
I knew that you can make money there and you can make that a job. I think now parents understand that you can make a job out of gaming. Like, it is now a career path, but you have to be successful. I think a perfect example is F1 sim racing. A guy who's come in start of this season, Alfie Butcher, he's only 16 years old, and his dad is following his journey. He's there with him and he lives it with him, and Jason's his dad, such a lovely guy. Both of them there together, and you know, it's always great to have conversation with them. And so I think for the parents to, you know, take away those, you know, usual society values, it's like boys, football and gaming and racing, girls, you play with dolls, and that's not how we should be thinking anymore. Should be like, okay, do you want to pick up that game? Do you enjoy that? Okay, let's buy you a sim rig. Let's get you a steering wheel for at home. You can practice. That's what, and it's skills are transferable in sim racing, and also the where we are in this situation between real life and gaming is very similar. There's not a big pool to pick from in karting for women to come up through the ranks to go race in Formula One, because there's just not enough people to pick from that are going to make it across that journey. And it's also the same with gaming, that there's just not a big enough pool. It's about making that pool a lot bigger at a younger age.
Yeah.
And then we will get to a stage where hopefully we do have not just one woman, but like,
you know, multiple.
Exactly.
You have to tackle it from grassroots.
You could easily have half the grid. You could easily have the full grid.
Exactly.
As women in F1 sim racing. There's no reason why you can't have that.
Yeah.
So I think,
because it's all about talent. It's not gender specific. Exactly. That's the amazing thing about motorsport. And although we're seeing it be male dominated, and it has been for years and years and years, it doesn't need to be that way. And that's why stuff like this is amazing, to sort of change that narrative. It's great to see more girls in karting, in motorsport as a whole, in sim racing, whatever it is that's been categorized for years and years and years as male dominated. Doesn't need to be. There is no reason that it has to be. So I think this is a great step in the right direction, Hayden. And hopefully we'll see more women being scouted for sim racing series, and maybe I'll get my sim racing skills up. I'd love to. So this is a great place, you know, to start or to aim for. Maybe I'll be entering competitions like this. There has been a lot of drama this season. Although people will say it's quite a dull season, I do think there's been loads of unexpected drama.
It's all been off the track.
But some of it's been on the track.
What has been your favourite race so far?
Well, it's between Australia for one of them, purely because we had a different winner.
the most dull race exactly. that we have had this season, but we did have, so I understand it.
That's why I know it's going to be quite controversial, because people found Australia very dull, but I was holding on to the fact that it wasn't Max Verstappen winning, so I was like, wow, a different race.
I think it would have been more exciting for fans had Max still been in the race.
Yes.
And it was a different winner, because then it's more like, because no matter what happened, if Sainz had made a mistake or was overtaken, it was still going to be somebody else who wins the race.
Yeah.
Whereas if Max was still in the race, then you're like, oh my God, please, Max, don't all of a sudden have all this amazing pace that you always have and you charge through the field and you take it away from us. Don't tease us, please.
There would have been something else there.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. They fix the brakes. They're five laps down. He jumps in the car and he still wins.
And then he wins the race.
Yeah.
I think it is Australia. But I really enjoyed the Japanese Grand Prix, and I really enjoyed the Chinese Grand Prix weekend, not mm-hmm. so much the Sunday race. So they're strong contenders. I'm going to say like 1, 2, 3. So it's Australia, then it's China as a whole weekend, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to say Japan.
Do you know what? Didn't ask. Honey, ask your top one. Didn't ask for your top
That's
three.
That's my opinion. What about you, Hayden? What do you enjoy?
Number one is going to be, I think, Japan. I think because of the mixed strategies.
Yeah.
Overtakes through corners where, you know, people... It shocked us to be like, oh, actually, maybe these cars can race with each other.
Yeah.
Then I would say China, because the sprint element of the weekend mm-hmm. was exciting.
We're on the same lines here, basically. Is it going to be Australia for
P3? I don't think
P3?
I can give it Australia. Like, yes,
you didn't
it was
enjoy
a different
it,
winner,
did you? Yeah.
But it was so dull. Like, we were like, oh my God, there's a big battle usually behind Max Verstappen. And then all of a sudden, everyone's like, let's just hold rank.
There
let's
was just a few small
nothing.
Incidents.
So I think I'd have to give it to, I don't know whether it's Saudi or Bahrain. Those two are too long ago. I'm having more recency bias to Australia. Mm. Let's go for
I just remember our Saudi. Chats about obviously the first two races, and we were just like, oh gosh, is this how the
season's but I remember
go?
There was a lot more battles behind, and that's why we were excited for Australia when Max DNF'd, because we're like, everyone's going to start fighting out. So I think Saudi, because mm-hmm. it was cool to then also see Behrmann jump into the car, and so
Magnussen go rogue.
Magnussen go rogue, that battle. Yeah. But then other than that, there wasn't much at the top. So maybe it was Bahrain, because there was more fights, at least from the Ferraris and the McLarens.
Difficult.
I think generally, because they all sucked. Other than Japan and China, the rest of them all sucked.
Not good marketing so, you know for Formula what? One. They all sucked the races.
Yeah.
They were crap.
I just have a one and a two. I don't have a third, because they all were boring after that.
Slightly mediocre.
Yeah.
But there's different pulls there for different reasons. That's why I say Australia. Different winner.
You're a lot
Please
more
can we have that again?
I am, aren't you?
Maybe. I'm just happy that we're racing again. You know, the winter break was going on way too long. Mm. I was just happy to see cars out on track. And there has been a lot of drama off track, so at least there's slight balance, a bit top heavy maybe.
What's your favourite moment though, so far this season? Favourite moment?
Is this specific to on track, or is
whatever
this just
you want.
A whole?
Whatever you want.
So I have a few favourite moments that aren't racing related, but they just spring to my mind instantly. So one of them now, being obviously quite recent, is Zhou celebrating at the end of the Chinese Grand Prix. That's why I'm wearing a steak hat right now for that. I love that moment. It was just so lovely to see. And I love it when there's a driver, you know, from the place of the Grand Prix. I just love to see how like passionate they are, especially when we go to Monaco for Charles Leclerc. I love that. It never really works out in his favour, but still. So that was one moment. Another moment was that Japanese Grand Prix, where there was a little kid and they loved George Russell. And then George Russell brought them out on stage.
Yeah.
Beautiful moment to see. And it had the George Russell, like there was like a George Russell coat, and it had all the George Russell poses. Loved that. It was really heartwarming. But if there's going to be a favourite on-track moment, I think it's from the Chinese Grand Prix of Lewis Hamilton in the sprint qualifying and sprint race.
Okay.
To see him leading the sprint race for a few laps, loved that. That was amazing for me. I thought it was Lewis's comeback. So I've got too many favourite moments. Mm-hmm. Signs winning. But no, we'll stick with that.
I don't think Lewis has ever won a sprint race. Lewis has never won a sprint race, so it was nearly going to happen.
So close.
And then Max Verstappen won by 12 seconds. For me,
mind,
best moment has to be Sainz getting his appendix removed, coming back.
That's your
winning.
Best moment.
Yeah, coming back and then winning the race straight after, 2 weeks after surgery. Like that as an achievement for a driver is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone expects him to be like, look, if he takes it easy and he's, you know, take at the back slow, end of the top three teams, understandable. But the fact that he came out and won that, amazing, amazing achievement, I think.
And he came out after and was like, yeah, I was in, you know, quite a lot of discomfort. Yeah. So you're in a lot of discomfort and you won. Yeah. It says a lot about him. So I hope we hear something about his seat sometime soon.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I guess it's just contract discussions really between Red Bull or Mercedes or Steak Audi.
Red Bull keep, you know, dropping that, saying, you know, we are in talks.
Red Bull are in talks with everyone. I think they've worked out, to get the best out of Sergio Perez, we need to keep him in the unknown. Don't give him a contract.
But just
otherwise he'll stop driving.
Yeah.
Keep being like, we are looking elsewhere, but like, I need to drive. And then Perez puts out some good performances. Okay, last thing before we get into what our audience has said.
Yeah.
I need your best driver, your most underrated driver of the season, who's dropped a clanger. So who is who's not having the greatest time so far? Those three.
So first one, best driver.
Best driver of the season. I can give you two if you want.
Well, automatically I'm going to put Sainz in there.
Okay, that's not
although he's made
go, but
little mistakes, I think justified. And like you say, with the whole appendix situation, and he's showing himself to be a fantastic driver. Maybe he was underrated before this. So I would say he's my best driver. Also, Alonso has really been impressing me. So I don't know if I put him more in like maybe most improved in the season because of the car that he's in. Obviously not as a driver because he's a fantastic driver. Yep. But yeah, I'm going to say best driver for me, Sainz.
Okay. I'm going to go the obvious, which is Max Verstappen.
Minus Max Verstappen. Yeah, and I'm not putting him in there.
That's why I said you have two options.
I'm
you
not
have two
putting
choices.
Him in there.
So I'm saying we have two options because the obvious choice is Max Verstappen. He's had such a dominant season. Somehow I don't understand how these power rankings work that we get every weekend because sometimes he's come out pole, fastest lap, race win, leads all the laps, and it's like 9.3. I'm like, that's a 10 out of 10 performance. What are you on about?
I remember Lewis Hamilton's power ranking was really low and he said something, I think it was to Lawrence.
Yeah.
And he was like, why is mine?
Yeah, that was his prediction.
Low?
They predicted him to be like 7th
in
the season.
That's it.
Well, I don't know. Looking at the standings, Lewis Hamilton is currently 9th, so he is wrong.
Yeah.
But that's because Lewis
worse.
Is lower. My best driver, I think Sainz is a good shout, so I'm not going to go with that one because you ticked that one off.
So okay,
I'm not going to steal
so
that
who's
one
the
you.
Next best?
I'm going to look further down the grid and go for Nico Hülkenberg.
I can fully back
I feel like he's leading that Haas team. His quali performances have been great.
Mm-hmm.
He's scored the points for Haas. He's currently 13th in the standings, 4 points for them. Magnussen's got 1 point. So Magnussen's also been a good driver. I think Haas have had a really solid pairing this year and have worked really well together. Of course, we saw it with Kevin Magnussen picking up those penalties and holding up the rest of the pack so that Hülkenberg could score that first point for Haas. And the fact that they have kind of like shut the door so far on all the other teams bar RB is mainly down to their two drivers. But Hülkenberg's been the best out of the two. And I think he's had an amazing season. So for me, Hülkenberg is my best driver so far this season. Other than Max Verstappen.
Minus Max Verstappen. No, I really agree with that as well. I throw him in there as well because I think Haas are just doing amazing. Like I say, they've really impressed me. I have been a Haas fan before because of Mr. Romain Grosjean, who I support a lot, if we haven't mentioned that. So I already have a little bit of Haas bias here, I think, but 100%, I think Hülkenberg is doing amazing. Magnussen, not so much points-wise, but he's doing there just to keep that team effort, the team spirit. So I agree.
Underrated next.
Most underrated. This is quite a difficult one because people would say that Sainz was underrated, obviously, but now he's moved out of that category. Who else has impressed me this season that no one else is really talking about? Sometimes I think Lando Norris is underrated because, yes, half of the time he's got a lot of hype around him, but then the other half of the time I think no one's talking about him ever. Yeah. And then he just kind of sits nicely between.
You have that other group who don't like the group that hypes him and be like, well, I'm going to put your driver down.
Yeah.
And that's the toxicity.
And then he just sits somewhere like no one's talking about him, but he's obviously in the points and he's quite nicely like high up technically in the points, but no one really talks about him. And now he's doing really well. So potentially throwing Lando Norris in there. But if not, I don't think Alonso is underrated because people see his power.
Alonso's definitely not underrated.
But then again, I don't know of, like, in my circle, a lot of, like, Alonso fans. Yeah, people are like, oh, yeah, he's amazing. But no one's like, my driver is Fernando Alonso.
Spend some time in Spain. That's all you need to do.
Sold. So I might just stick with Lando Norris, I think. Okay. I'm going through in my head all the other teams. Okay. I'm not going to pick an Alpine. I'm not really going to pick a Williams. Mm-hmm. Haas, are they underrated though? I don't think so. So I'm just going to have to stick with that. Otherwise, we'll be here all day.
Okay. I'm going to go... with? Now, bear with me on where I'm going with this one.
Okay.
I'm going to say there's two drivers. There's one driver who I'm going to pick, but there's two drivers.
I think I know one of them.
Honorable mentions, okay. Which are Sergio Perez and Charles Leclerc. I think Sergio Perez has done a really good job this season, second in the championship. I think he's been able to back up Max Verstappen a lot better than he did last season. We are only five races in, and we were kind of in a similar position last season. Then he fell off after that. So let's see how the next five races go. Mm-hmm. But he's been able to back up his teammate after all the scrutiny that was under last season. And I think he's doing exactly the job that he needs to do. He needs to be that Bottas that Hamilton had at Mercedes. Mm-hmm. He needs to back up Verstappen, get those second places. And I think on the majority of races, he's been in second or in contention for second, bar Australia, where they came out and said the Red Bull wasn't that good. We'll never know because mm-hmm. Max wasn't able to finish that race. But other than that race, he has been in second, only really lost it because of safety cars and strategies.
Yeah.
I think Red Bull still should have had
P2. On that point though, Hayden, you know what I was thinking about when you said that with Bottas? I feel like Bottas did get a lot of stick at times for being, oh, he's just the number two driver, you know, he's never going to be where Hamilton is. But I feel like Perez gets way more stick than Bottas does. Maybe because of how Max is performing, the gap can sometimes be a lot bigger.
I don't know. I think as soon as George Russell entered the sport and after his first season, there was always Bottas under pressure. So from 2020, 2021, and, you know, he came into Mercedes in 2017, did his job in those first two seasons because it was Hamilton versus Vettel. So Bottas is doing that job to be that second driver, not to necessarily win because Hamilton's the one fighting another drive for the championship. Mm-hmm. So whereas 2020 and 2021 was so far off where Hamilton was and the fact that he was fighting with Verstappen, everyone was like, oh, George Russell should have that seat. Give that seat to George. That was non-stop for the whole two seasons. Yeah. I think Perez gets the same. And I think that's understandable that, you know, I think some people expect every driver in Formula One to be the greatest driver of all time and they should all be Max Verstappen's. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Red Bull should have two Max Verstappen's in that team. So two, like Max and Fernando Alonso, and that's what should be in that team, which is fair enough. You know, mm-hmm. it's the best team in the sport. And we want to see that. But in terms of for Red Bull, they want to take home the Constructors' Championship. Yeah. They want one-twos, and
one
that's how they look
driver,
best.
One driver that will be a team player and help the stronger driver, but still getting those points.
But he's not my underrated. Another person, honourable mention, Charles Leclerc.
Okay.
I think a lot of hype this season has been about Carlos Sainz. Mm-hmm. And yes, Carlos Sainz has had the better results. But I think, oddly, you know, Charles Leclerc has just been quietly consistent, picking up those results, being strong. Was helped by Sainz missing the race in Saudi Arabia, allowed him to gain points. But he's currently sitting, you know, 76 points in the championship. He's ahead of his teammate. Yes, his teammate did win a race. So I think he's been quietly consistent. So an honourable mention. Mm-hmm. But my driver, and I bang that drum a lot this season, Yuki Tsunoda.
Oh, I actually wasn't expecting that one. I thought you were going to say Albon or Joe.
I think a lot of the talk around RB has been more hateful against Ricciardo, which I disagree with. I think, again, people can criticise and say, you know, I think people are more critical in the sense because he's a driver that has so much experience and we know what he can do.
Yeah.
We've seen him in a Red Bull and we've seen him do it. And that's where we want him to be. And in order to get that Red Bull seat, if it's available, he needs to be that driver that was at Red Bull. He can't be beaten by Yuki Tsunoda. Mm-hmm. But Yuki has been beating him, bar
Yuki's
China.
Been doing amazing. Well, even in the Japanese Grand Prix, he was so strong for Yuki. He was making overtakes left, right and centre where people weren't expecting. And maybe it was because, you know, a home race, it's given him more fuel. Mm-hmm. But we have seen beforehand, he is kind of outperforming Ricciardo at times. And there's nice battles between them. Like, we do see that also. But unfortunately, Ricciardo has more pressure on him now, so maybe that's it. You know, the team are basically saying you've got an ultimatum here. A few races, if you don't perform, you have to go. Yeah. maybe that's affecting him a little bit more. But aside from that, mm-hmm. Yuki is showing that he's a strong driver.
But I never hear anyone talk about, oh, what about Yuki replacing Perez? I never hear that conversation. And he is part of the Red Bull family.
I've heard it very like mildly, like every now and then there'll be like one or two comments.
Ricardo needs to perform better in order to get that seat. Mm-hmm. Okay, but Yuki Tsunoda is the one who's doing better than him. He's outscoring him in the championship.
I think because Yuki's younger as well, it just comes into like, oh, maybe they'll give him a few years, his reputation gets built a little bit higher, and then people will be like, oh yeah, you know, Yuki can go elsewhere. But I think for now, because Ricardo's the bigger driver, been in the sport for longer, people are just kind of discrediting Yuki at times.
Underrated.
Underrated driver.
Yeah.
You've got some good picks, Hayden.
And who's dropped the most clangers this season? Who is
I think it's easy.
Do I have to cover my ears?
No. Oh, no, definitely not. I should cover my ears. Hamilton.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a massive Hamilton fan. It hurts me to say that, but he's underperforming. He's away from where George is as well. If they were like neck and neck and they were always next to each other in the positions, then, you know, fair enough. I might be like, yeah, George is outperforming him, but not by much. It's very close. But we're not seeing that. There's something going wrong, whether it's the team favouring George now in terms of setups and everything to do with the car. Maybe it's Lewis has lost that winning championship mentality. Don't know what it is. Could be loads of different variables, completely a bundle of variables. But unfortunately, something's not going right for Lewis Hamilton. So that's my driver that's dropped off this season.
I have to agree. I mean, I went to it. I was saying I had to cover my ears. So, you know, I thought you were going to say Lance Stroll, which I think is fair.
Well, actually, I've got a comment. Lance Stroll makes these mistakes year after year. So it's not really this season he's dropping off for me.
All right. I will see myself out. Amber's going to talk to you and just talk to herself for the rest.
I like Lance Stroll, but I'm just speaking the facts, Hayden.
No, it's fair enough. I think he's definitely in that conversation massively. But as a Lance Stroll fan,
you have to back him up.
I'm just not going to say him because I'm not going to disrespect him that much. And I'm going to have to sadly go to your no.
Oh, okay.
You've taken that one. I'm not going to steal your one again. I'm going to pick another driver. So you're going to have one fan base against you.
Yeah.
I'll take on the other one, and I'm going to say,
I know who you're saying,
Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah.
Sadly,
it's true.
Only because again, I love Daniel Ricciardo. I think he's a great ambassador for the sport. He's an amazing character, and I understand fully why he has such a huge fan base, because he is such a lovable guy. Mm-hmm. But you also have to be a fast racing driver, and I know he can be. Red Bull days, 2014, if we had equal cars, he would have fought for that championship, because his 2014 season was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You know, 2016 at the start of that season was incredible as well. I just feel like, you know, and 2017, 2018, in those Red Bull days, was such a strong driver. But it's just, you know, Renault was good. Mm-hmm. He had to build up to it. But in the end, before he left, you know, was really taking up that
they
team. And I think they could have been good.
Position.
Alpine are in the mud now. So it was a right decision not to stay around with them.
Yeah.
But it just didn't work out at McLaren. And then something happened. Something happened, whether it's confidence related or whatnot, or because there's now a lot of, because the problem is, when you become such a lovable character and have a big fan base, then you also have a lot of people who kind of dislike that, and then on the opposite side and will attack more because you are bigger. So for example, Yuki Tsunoda, under the radar, doesn't have a lot of people going against him, but doesn't have a lot of people fighting his corner. So, you know, there's a lot less voices there, whereas Daniel Ricciardo has a lot more voices praising him, but also a lot more voices coming against him.
I think it's the same with Hamilton as well, isn't it? You know, he's got a massive negative view of people coming after him, and there's also a massive positive, a huge fan base against it with him as well. So you do see that with a more higher profile drivers. It's not like they're just loved, they're probably equally as hated. Well, I think Lance Stroll is probably not fitting under that, because he's kind of massively hated, doesn't have a lot of people supporting him.
I never say that Lance Stroll's underrated, he's overhated.
Yeah, exactly. I think with Ricardo, it shows how important mentality is for this sport. I just think he's not there. He doesn't have the mental place that he did have beforehand. And you never know, there could be a number of reasons as to why that is. Because of the sport, because of something outside of the sport. I do think that's what we're seeing at the minute. Yeah. He's got all the talent. He's just kind of lost it because the sport is so mental. He just needs to get himself back in that place, whatever it is, and hopefully we see him performing better. But we can't see him perform better because people keep bumping into him. Lance Stroll.
All right. Well, he also bumped into Alex Albon.
Yeah,
but
he did.
China was more positive.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at that and look at towards the next five races. And hopefully the tides change and he has stronger performances. I still want to see Yuki up there, but hopefully they can both be up there. You know, both be challenging with each other. Mm-hmm. And fighting for points regularly with the RB, which is what we all thought coming into the season, that they were going to be a stronger team.
You definitely.
Okay, I definitely
made a few comments, but...
And I was definitely let down. Okay, so those are our bangers, our clangers, our underrated drivers. Let's hear what some of the audience is saying. So this one comes in from Adam Reed over on Instagram. Their best moments is Hamilton's pole in China before it was reinstated.
Before it got taken away from all of us.
Just says Hülkenberg. So I guess Hülkenberg
for a favourite moment.
Yeah, for a favourite moment. So just Hülkenberg.
Agree.
Just in general, just really love Hülkenberg. Hamilton to Ferrari as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say we've been having a lot of chat there about our favourite moments in Hamilton, and the Haases have come into it. So completely agree. Mm-hmm. Hamilton moving to Ferrari was mental for everyone. Whether you agreed with it or you didn't, was crazy. Hülkenberg has impressed massively. Mm-hmm. I loved Hülkenberg. I saw him, where was it, 2019 Silverstone. I was stood outside the paddock and I had paddock club passes, but they weren't, you know, the paddock access.
Flexing on everyone. I see how it is.
I won a competition, actually.
Oh, jeez.
With a Ferrari.
All right. I'll go with... Sorry, us peasants aren't good enough for
in
you.
In the grandstands. No, it was really good. And I was stood outside the paddock to see some of the drivers. And Nico Hülkenberg walked past, gave me a wave, said hello from that moment. I already loved him as a driver, but from them, I was like, wow. Then he left the sport. So I was absolutely gutted. Now he's back in the sport. Absolutely buzzing to see him back in the sport, and not only back, but doing well.
Well, there's a lot of love for Nico Hülkenberg. This next one comes in from Sean M79. And they say, best driver is Max. Underrated driver is Nico Hülkenberg.
Yes.
Favorite moment. Let's share this moment together. Ferrari Australia. So when they were side by side around the lap when they got the 1-2. And then biggest shock, and I don't like this one, but this is Stroll having a seat. So, is that the, why is that the biggest shock? That's the least unsurprising. We all know he's got an undisclosed contract for the rest of his... He was literally asked this season about, this race just got about his contract. And he was just smiling, being like, we'll just have to wait and see. He knows he's secure
he's
for the rest of his life.
He's not worried at all. I think it's just a shock because despite his dad owning the team, I just think... People are like, when is he going to go? When is he leaving this sport? Like, when is someone else going to challenge Lawrence or challenge Aston Martin to be like, come on? But it's not going to happen.
It's fine. Let Alonso win everything. Just let Lance Stroll be there and happy. This
fun.
One comes in from Johnny.ze. Best driver, Max. So I think a lot of people agree.
Yeah, you have to. You can't debate it, really.
It's a fair.
Although I don't want to agree.
It's always difficult. It's not when you pick driver of the day and the winner never gets chosen despite doing absolutely nothing wrong and destroying the rest of the field.
You but know, to be driver of the day, you have to impress. You have to do something.
They do
something out of the norm than just P1.
So whoever wins never gets driver of the day.
Unless you came from like P16 to P1, then that's driver of the day.
It's like, you've got a trophy, you've won, mate, all right? Let somebody else have a chance. Let someone else have something else.
Yeah.
Favourite moment, and I really like this one, is Behrman's dad's reactions.
Yes.
Oh, so wholesome.
Everyone jumped on that on Twitter. He was scared, happy, nervous. I think he had like every single emotion, didn't he, for his son?
So wholesome. Underrated driver. Carlos Sainz until Australia. Underrated until Australia. And after that, I think there's been a lot of hype.
I agree. That was like my comments, basically.
And biggest shock, Hamilton to Ferrari.
Yeah, again, never saw that coming at all. I literally remember the exact moment it happened. I was like, no, this is my partner. I was like, I think Hamilton's going to Ferrari. And even he got into F1 recently because of me. And he's like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, even you know how mental that is. And you've only been in the sport for a hot minute. So,
yeah. Well, Amber, that is the season so far. We're five races in. You think it's been okay?
Not as dull as everyone would expect me to say. I think it's been not super exciting because of the race winner. But if you take away Max Verstappen dominating for most of the season, there's been some great battles. There's been some crazy things off track. There's also been crazy things on track. So for me, it's like it's a season that's promising for the next few races.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that the next five races are good. I think on track it's been kind of dull. And that's not just because Max has been dominating, all right? I'm not
just
taking my British bias out of it.
Yeah.
you know, it's because further down the field there have been races where nothing's... Australia, I bring it back to Australia, nothing happened in Australia. We had a new winner, but nothing happened. Apart
but for
from
me, that's
Max.
Just maybe one race where it was quite dull, but obviously the most exciting aspect of that was Sainz winning. But there's a few little things Australia, so I don't rule that out completely.
I'm greedy,
but
I
get
want
it.
More, okay? I'm greedy and I want more.
More action. So I get it,
in,
though, I get it.
Yeah, five races in. Let's hope the next five races, you know, blow our minds and we have some really great conversations to talk about when we bring this back to recap the next five races
I'm
on
super optimistic.
The podcast. Thank you very much once again for joining me. Thank you everyone who has been listening. Make sure you follow us on the audio platform you're currently listening to right now to check out all of our WTF1 podcasts, and we'll see you on the next one very soon. Bye-bye.